Are you searching for a deeper understanding of yourself and your place in the world? Do you yearn for more balance, more peace, and purpose in your life? Well, look no further than the Intuitive Revolution Podcast, your trusted source for holistic insights and intuitive guidance. I'm your host, Alicia Ferricelli, and I am ready to take you on a journey to inner peace and balanced well-being. As a medium and death worker, Dominique connects spirits beyond with those who are still living in this world. Over the years, connecting with thousands of clients truly is a humbling and beautiful opportunity she doesn't take for granted. As a certified death doula, she advocates talking all things death and grief. She believes it's time to get comfortable being uncomfortable with death and dying. Well, thank you, Dominique, for coming on the show today and sharing your knowledge. This is going to be such a great topic, talking about death, talking about dying, talking about connecting with spirit, all kinds of cool things. So thank you again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It'll be a good conversation. It'll be fun.
Oh yes, it's going to be exciting. So your journey as a medium and death worker is both unique and fascinating. Can you share how you first discovered your ability to connect with spirits and how it shaped your life?
So I've always been a medium since I was a very little girl, like pre-elementary school. I've always been able to see people on the other side. And I was really lucky and had a family who was like, well, hey, let's just roll with it, and super supportive, and would get me to seminars and books and anything that they could possibly get me into. And I couldn't imagine doing anything else at all. But I don't know. I think it's a cool perspective to have. We learn so much from the other side. So it's a cool perspective. I think it's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah, that is fascinating that you developed this skill and embraced it as such a young child. And the most fascinating part is you had support behind that.
Right. We have a very odd, unconventional family in general. At least like my immediately family is very unconventional. I think most of us are born like psychic and we can connect to the other side, but most people scratch it up as like, oh, they're imaginary friend, or oh, they're just making it up. And by the time you hit like 7, 8, 9, it's kind of goes away. And I had a mom that was very unconventional, and she was like, oh, cool. She's not just talking to some random imaginary friend. This is something that she's been consistent with for years. So by the time I was, 5, 6, we were going to conventions and talking to people like Sylvia Brown and really getting out there and doing all the stuff. So it was fun. It was really cool. I was very lucky.
That's cool. Did your mom have the same intuition gifts?
No, I think I'm the only one. I mean, we all have like intuition. We all do. I just think I'm the only one that got the support to run with it, to really dive into it.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah. I like it. It's fun. I'm pretty sure one of my children have it. We don't know for sure because he has special needs. But when he was little, he would sit in the closet and close the door and talk to people. And I was like, I bet I know what he's doing, but it's just one of those cool things.
And that's so cool to have a mom that understands and supports that, and is not like, oh, my child's like possessed or something wrong, or this crazy imagination. And
right. Well, that's what I mean by like my very core group of people were, because the rest of my family would not have been cool with it. Yeah. So she was like, it's okay. We're going to do us and let everybody else do them. And it's fine. And it worked.
I love that. That's amazing. It really is.
She's pretty cool.
Yeah. So as a certified death doula, you advocate for open conversations about death and grief. Why do you believe it's important to break the stigma surrounding these topics? And how do you approach these conversations?
So death and the conversation of death is really weird only in the U.S. People talk about death as a natural part of life all over the world, but here we're so afraid to talk about it. It's a big taboo thing. And in my opinion, as a death doula and as a medium, I really believe the only way to grow and to get comfortable with it is to get uncomfortable with these conversations and force them. Like, you don't grow in your comfort zone, right? So we just have to do it. We just have to open our mouths and be the first ones to say anything. And normally you'll start seeing the trickle of people around you like, oh, well, I always thought X, Y, Z, or I've always wondered, because you have to give other people permission around you to have these conversations. And if you just do it, everybody else, I promise you, falls in suit. They're just like, oh, I want to talk about it, but I don't want to be weird. And I'm like, I'm a pro at weird. I'm down with it. Let's just be weird. But it's really great. And as far as how to bring up these topics, I don't sugarcoat anything. My clients for years, I warn them going in, I don't like tell you all the happy bubbly stuff. If it's uncomfortable, we're going to be really raw and we're going to have these conversations. that's the only way to make them, you know, not taboo. It's the only way to make them comfortable. So I have a tendency to just kind of open my mouth and spew out stuff about, you know, when I die, this is what I want to happen. And if my kids put me in a nursing home to die, I will haunt them. So what do you want to happen when you die? And people look at you and pause for a minute, but then they suddenly like purge all the stuff out of them that they wanted to say. But yeah, I really think it's just about taking that step. A lot of people want to, they just don't know how.
So talk a little bit about being a death doula. People are familiar with, you know, birth doulas, but death doula is a little bit different. Tell our audience a little bit about what you do if they were to hire someone on to do that, what to expect.
Right. So a birth doula and a death doula do the same exact job, just on opposite sides of the same door. Birth doulas will bring them in and we just walk them back out. The same concept. We help you advocate for your plan. We talk to you about stories and your life as a whole and what do you want to have happen before, during, and after your death. And a lot of people think they only have like one option. You go to a hospital and die, or you go to a hospice and die. And that's not it. That is not it. And I think people just don't know because we don't have these conversations. We do everything from pre-planning people's exit out of this life years in advance, sometimes months in advance. Sometimes people will contact me as their loved ones are dying because they don't know what to do. So we get to be a support for the family and an advocate for the individual that's transitioning into death.
Okay. That's a really special job.
It's so much fun. It's such sacred work. And you really find out who people are when they're transitioning. And when people face their own mortality, it does something to people. It humbles you and brings out a part of you that has been holding on. And I just think it's really cool.
Do you find there's more peace or more fear towards the end?
Normally there's a lot of fear leading up to it. Mm-hmm. Normally there's a lot of fear leading up to it. But really, I'm a firm believer that we're all just walking each other home and we can walk you so far. And then somebody else is, I've never seen anybody cross alone. Somebody always comes to meet them and walks them the rest of the way. Normally, right when they realize it's going to happen, you see this peace that comes over people like, okay, I'm good. I'm good with this.
Yeah. When they see the amazing thing that's lying up ahead of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They realize this is just the next step. You know, this is one step of our soul's existence.
Yeah. So mediumship is a concept that many people are curious about, but may not fully understand. Can you explain what being a medium entails and how you experience communication with those who've passed on?
I am a huge skeptic. So people that are skeptical about mediums, I am right there with you. I believe that probably 90% of people in this line of work are fakes and fraud. So make sure you always trust your instincts. If you're talking to somebody, if you don't feel like that's the right person for you to have a reading with, then trust your instincts. Any ethical practitioner would fully support that. Absolutely fully support that. I think being a medium, we get to learn so many cool lessons about life and the human experience as a whole. And I think if you go into it open-minded, that's great, but be skeptically open, you know, like be okay with being open about it, but don't just blissfully follow whatever somebody tells you as far as mediumship.
Yeah. And I feel like there's ways that are probably, you can almost back it up feeling it and intuitively to know whether or not this is really a real deal or not.
Oh, absolutely.
Trying to pull something over it. Yeah.
Absolutely. There's so many people who can like read body language. And that's why I have an assistant that does all my emails. I have no clue who I'm meeting until I'm sitting in front of them. Because a lot of the times people, when they reach out to a medium, they're dealing with grief and they're dealing with trauma. So they'll email us and be like, oh, well, my mom died of breast cancer 2 weeks ago and I need to know X, Y, Z. So at that point, if I sit down with you, I already know everything that you want to hear. So I literally have somebody else do all my scheduling because I don't want to know anything. That way it's a little bit more validation for them and I can go in completely unbiased and do my work.
Yeah, that's remarkable that you do that.
It makes it easier, way, way easier for everybody. It just makes it easier.
Yeah, you go in with that, like you said, without any type of biased opinions going in with it. So do you find it's easier to connect with people who have recently passed or those years ago?
Doesn't matter. Does not matter. And this, I know people will probably be like, okay, whatever. But like time and space and reality are not real. We are very much in the human experience, have created this concept of time, but really humanity as a whole is such a small drop in the bucket of the existence of this world, right? I think we're like 1/10 or something like that of the existence of the world. We have not been around that long. So on the other side, it's very different. And as far as receiving messages, there's no two mediums alike. None of us are alike. Some people just hear things. Some people just see things. I kind of get it in waves, like a smell will trigger it. I will often walk through the death of someone. They'll show me their death transitioning through it. And that's how we explain how it works. But it's always an adventure. No two things are the same, ever, ever.
So do you find it, is there ever a time where they would have to want to show up? Or
oh yeah.
Yeah. A time where just like there's no one, they're just not the spirit's not willing to show up or to say anything.
Absolutely, that happens. Some mediums work as a closed channel, which means that they are only, when you come into a session, you come in with one specific person. Normally they'll ask you like a name and a connection to them, and then they will try to reach out and pull them in. I work as an open channel, which is kind of like walking into a super foggy room and having a bunch of people on the outside and you're pulled to different people. I always explain it to my clients at the beginning of our sessions. Like, I don't know who, what, when, where, how someone's going to come through, but I love working as an open channel because often the people that do come through are not the ones we anticipated, but they bring the message that we didn't know we needed. But if there is someone particular you want to connect with, I will absolutely take that opportunity the last half of our session and try to reach in and pull them. Very rarely do they just not show up. Sometimes they don't, or sometimes they'll only get close and give us enough to be like, this is what they're showing me, but they don't want to be in it right now. And that's okay.
Yeah. No, which makes sense because maybe there's information and things that the other person is trying to pull from them that they don't need access to.
Yeah, a lot of people are dealing, like, we have work to do in this life and we have work to do on the other side. Yeah. And they may just be processing their work and not comfortable with it yet. And that's okay. Totally okay.
Yeah. Fascinating. This is always fascinating to me.
I enjoy it. It's always fun. Something new every day.
Yeah. Well, do you have like a story from your childhood of when you first discovered or something fascinating from their experience?
From my childhood, probably the big one, like we have really cool cases throughout all of the years we've been doing this. But from my childhood, I was in third grade and I had a teacher. That's when my mom kind of sat down and was like, we don't talk about this at school. I was in third grade and I was talking to my teacher about how pretty her mom's dress was and how much her mom loved being in the classroom and this book she was reading to us. And by the end of the day, when my mom picked me up, she was like, so we need to have this conversation because my teacher called my mom and was like, does she do this at home? Because my mom died months ago and my mom was not in that classroom. And so when my mother explained it to her, it definitely made a really cool connection because third grade, I'm what, 7, 8, something like that. And so it was a really cool door, but at the same time I had to learn. I mean, I live in the South. We don't talk about stuff like that down here. And so that was the first conversation. She's like, we can talk about it in our home and if people come to you, but we do not talk about it in public and at school. That was probably the first big one for me when I was young.
That's got to be kind of almost, I don't want to say detrimental, but it's got to put something on you to kind of shut off who you are authentically as a child in a way.
Yeah. It's not that so much. To me, it was just kind of like, you know, how like some people are like, we don't talk about how dad doesn't live here, or how dad does XYZ or mom is gone, whatever. To me, it was like, that was like, oh, we just don't talk about it. I didn't realize the weight of it until I got older. I didn't really understand what I was being told to like hide a big part of who I was. I just didn't understand as a kid. We just, you know, don't understand the gravity of it. But as an adult, I have two adult children now, well, almost an adult child and one adult child. And I didn't, again, we live in the South. I didn't talk about things publicly. People knew, but they have to come to me about it. And my daughter in high school loved to tell everyone she met, like, so my mom talks to dead people. You know, my mom can do this. And I was like, well, I guess we're going to talk about it in public now. So it's one of those cool things that kind of came full circle.
Yeah, especially your children are talking about it in school and it's not affecting in their They're owning it. I just love this generation. They just own everything.
Loves it. She's 21 and she tells everyone. Everybody, it's so funny, like it cracks me up. She will send me clients, and because she's in the military, and I will get stuff. She's like, "Oh, your daughter said," and I'm like, "Of course, my daughter said." Absolutely believe that 100%. I totally believe it. She'll call me from haunted locations and, like, "Mom, what do you see in here?" I'm like, "Get out, I'm like, just stop, like, get out of the haunted, creepy place at 3 a.m. So, how it goes.
She's your best lead source, I'm sure.
She's a mess.
Awesome. So let's talk about death and dying as universal experiences. Yeah, each culture has its own way of dealing with them. Have your interactions with spirits or your work as a death doula given you insights in different cultural perspectives of death?
Oh, that's a good question. I love people that come from different cultures that embrace death differently, because we don't experience that here. And I'm glad there's, like, a positive death movement, I guess is what they're calling it, where we're talking about green cemeteries and different processes that you can have now. I really think it's neat when I have clients that come through from other cultures, because I can talk to their loved ones and connect to my clients in a totally different way, because they're so open about it and they're not immediately, like, shut down and they don't want to talk about it. And I think it's so neat. Like, I have a friend that is in Rwanda. That's where he lives. And the process and the cultural differences compared to America, for example, are wild. There, when someone dies for 7 days, like, nobody works. Like, nobody does anything. And everybody brings them food and clothes and everything. But after that seventh day, things go back to normal. And, like, that's part of life. And I'm a big believer that grief has no outline or way it's supposed to be done. But it's very cool to see how cultures embrace things differently than we do. And they all carry such cool experiences and lessons. Absolutely. They're very cool.
Yeah. I've heard, like, I think in Italy is where they do that too. Maybe they spend, like, 3 or 4 days just, like, mourning, grieving, and this huge, you know, cry, and then everything just kind of goes back.
Yeah. Goes back to normal. Like, this is part of our life's experience. That's all it is, the human experience.
Yeah.
Very cool. I'm fascinated.
Yeah. It is very fascinating. That. And really taking, it's great to have someone like you that really takes this kind of the stress, because it's a lot. I think there's a lot of fear that's associated with dying, a lot of the unknown, you know, especially in the U.S. growing up in the cultures that we do, religious cultures that we do, it's just a lot of fear of what happens afterwards, and to have something to be able to walk you through and be like, it's okay, you know, it's their time to go, and let them
go. Right. And I think a lot of it, again, it goes back to, we think that we have to, well, we get sick, we go to the hospital or, like, a hospice center, and we die. And that's all it is. And I'm a big believer, like, there's so much, like, this is your life. This is the final set of your human experience. And so we talk about things like, what are your favorite scents? What memories are tied to those scents? So, like, say your aunt is passing away and she doesn't like the feel of flannel on her skin. You don't know that if you don't have that conversation. Somebody may think that they're putting flannel sheets on her bed or in her chair, it's going to make her feel warm, and all it's going to do is irritate her. If you burn that lavender candle thinking it's going to help calm her down and bring her peace as this exit happens, and all she can think about smelling that lavender is that cranky old lady across the street that had lavender flower beds or something. So having these conversations about what makes you happy, what's your favorite season, what music do you like? All these things that seem small and insignificant can make the transition, like, night and day. It'll be so much better. I tell the story about my dad dying for over and over and over again. He's definitely where I got my dark, snarky sense of humor about death. And it's great. And I love it. But he was in the hospital for 21 days. And he looked at me. He's like, "I want to go home." I'm like, "I know you want to go home, but we got to get you to the rehab center so you can walk around." He looked at me. He's like, "I want to go home." And I'm like, "Noted. Got it." So my husband left the hospital within, like, minutes. He came home, moved his hospital bed to his living room where he could look out the front window that he liked. It was April. Like, things aren't blooming in April. So he went down to, like, Lowe's and bought tons of flower pots and loaded his front porch with flowers. So when he came home, he could sit in his chair, sip his coffee, and look at flowers. And within a few days, he passed away comfortably in his home with music playing on his radio he liked. And that makes the transition so much easier. And if you want to be in a hospital, cool. If you don't, that's okay. I have a client that turned into a friend. that was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer out of nowhere. She was perfectly healthy. She's been a client of mine for a couple of years, and she messaged me. She's like, I'm leaving. And I'm like, where are you going? She's like, I'm going to Florida because I want to look at the beach and be able to sit outside and be warm and look at the beach when I die. And I'm like, well, I loved getting to know you, and hopefully I talk to you again. And that's what she did. She left like a week later to go stay with friends in Florida. And I love that. That's you taking control of your own existence and life in your final stage of life. And I think it's beautiful.
That is super beautiful. Excuse me. Yeah, super, super beautiful. So, let's talk about grief. It's a deeply personal and often complex emotion. So from your perspective, as both a medium and a death worker, what advice would you give to someone navigating the grief process?
Oh, so grief is a very fickle thing. We're working on a workbook that should come out in June because grief, people think it belongs in this box, right? And they have this outline and the 5 stages of grief. And I think it's all just crap. We have this idea that you should grieve for a year or 6 months, or you should act and walk like this. And grief doesn't work that way. Grief is very different. I call it the wave is what we've always called it. Sometimes you can stand in it and it's like water at your feet and just kind of touching you, but you can go about your day. And then out of nowhere, like nothing at all will trigger it, and a wave will come in and suck you down and you can't breathe and you feel like you're drowning and you can't see a light anymore. But it's all part of grief. There's a hospice nurse that I adore named Hadley. You can find her on all the social media. She wrote an incredible book about lessons and experiences as a hospice nurse. And she described it beautifully, but she's like, there's a box. And when you lose someone or you're experiencing grief, it's like a little button on the bottom of this box. And there's a ball bouncing around. And when the box is small, your grief is new, it'll hit that button a lot because the box is small. But as years go on, the box gets bigger and the ball still bounces around. It doesn't hit the button as often, but when it does hit that button, it's like it's fresh and like it just happened. Like the pain of grief doesn't go away. Yeah. We just learn how to process it differently every day. And it's weird the things that we grieve. It's not just the death of a loved one. We can grieve the loss of the life we thought we were going to have. We can grieve this career that we loved, but it's just not it anymore. There's so many ways and levels of grief, and people just think it has this little box and little time frame, and that is not it. Absolutely not it. And it's okay to feel it, whether you lost somebody or whatever you're grieving 6 months ago or 10 years ago, it's still there and it's going to come and go as a wave in and out, that ebb and flow of, you know, natural sink of life.
It's almost like you learn to live with it.
Oh yeah. You learn to walk with it.
Yeah.
Some days it's heavy. Some days it's not. Some days you'll think you're totally fine, and then suddenly you're doing dishes and it hits you and you just start sobbing for, you don't know why. And that's just part of it. And it's all okay. It's absolutely okay. We had a client last week and she was like, my husband died a year ago. And I thought these sporadic bouts of crying would stop by now. And I'm like, oh no, you're just getting started. Like year one, you're on autopilot. In my personal experience, year two is always the hardest. Year two is always the hardest, but it's one of those things. It always lasts. It's never going to go away. And that's okay.
Or the first holidays and then year two. Yeah.
I think so. This is just my experience. I could be totally different from everybody else. I think year one, we're so hyper aware of the first birthday, the first holidays, the first everything. And we're focused on it so much. By year two, you start accepting they're not coming back. And then when those holidays and birthdays hit, you're not hyper-focused and it hits you really hard. I've always noticed year two is way worse than year one, which is weird, but it's just my experience.
So what advice would you give to someone who is going through year two right now?
Oh, just let it happen. Just go with it. If you need to be alone, as long as you are not hurting yourself or someone else, grieve however you want. Absolutely grieve however you want. If you want to go outside and have this like primal scream, get it out. Now go for it. If you want to get in your car and go for a ride, if you want to make all the food they loved, whatever it is that's going to help you through that wave in that moment. Again, as long as you're not hurting yourself or someone else, it's okay. Just go through the process. There's no amount of distraction that's going to make it go away. Don't think you can just keep ignoring it and deflecting. It's going to happen. And that's okay that it's going to happen. Things that people don't think about is when that first letter comes in from like the government, like, oh, by the way, you're now a widow and you're no longer Mrs. so-and-so, or now you suddenly have to change titles on property, those little things that people are just like, aren't, you know, they're going to happen. Signing those pieces of paper are hard. And that normally doesn't happen until months after their death. So it's one of those, it's just part of the process.
Yeah. I'm so grateful that you gave people permission.
Oh yeah. We have to. I'm sure
the amount of advice that people are like, you'll get over it. It's okay. You should be fine by now. People almost need that permission to be able to still go through the process. And then you get emotions that get just locked down inside your body that they're not processing through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We think that we can distract from it and like put it on a shelf and it's just going to go away. That's not reality. It's not going to go away. Grief is patient. It has no time. And how you deal with it is totally unique, up to you. Even if, let's just say, three wives all lost their husbands in the same way, all three are going to grieve differently. It's three separate experiences. And a lot of people will judge them how they react. And I'm like, that's not your place. That's not, you don't know. You don't know what your experience. When I lost my mother is going to be different than when you lose your mother or when my neighbor, it's all going to be different. And that's okay. It is okay. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to be mad. And that's another thing. People are like afraid to talk ill of the dead or afraid to get mad at them. You can totally be mad at them. Doesn't mean you hate them. It just means like, how dare you leave me here right now? And I need to feel this emotion and get it out. That's okay. It's totally okay.
Yeah.
It's all okay.
Yeah.
It's all part of it.
Yeah. So you've worked with thousands of clients offering one-on-one sessions, group readings, and gallery readings. Mm-hmm. Can you share one or two particular memorable experiences that stand out to you?
Oh, we got a lot of those. We have a lot. And just so people know, I do not share information or experiences without like written consent from my clients. This work is super built on trust and respect. So anything I share like here on social media or anything, it's all been approved and I'm allowed to share it. I've asked many times and have consent about it. I think the one everybody likes a lot is when I had a client come through and kind of name his murderer after like years after his death, totally changed the whole narrative. And it was very cool the way he did that. We have another one that it shows just how little control, like people like me as a medium, we have no control over these things. We are just like a mouse box, you know, that's just what we are. And how a lot of the times clients will come in and be like, well, if it's really my dad, he said he's going to say this. It is never what dad said he's going to say. It's going to be something totally different that there's no way I know that he brings up. For example, the client that his mother and his uncle came in together, mom's a super believer, uncle's a hardcore skeptic, didn't buy any of it. He's just here to support her. And he tried doing this. It's so funny. And I talk about this all the time. He came forward and he was like, well, if that's really my nephew, what was his favorite car he had? And I'm like, I don't know what his favorite car is. I don't know. He's not showing me a car. I said, but he is showing me this really weird black spiky thing. And I have no clue what it is, but he's like laughing at you and like telling you to cook it. And he had this like, oh my God, look on his face. Because his uncle was like, he was really, really wanted to be a chef really bad. So he was going to all these different culinary schools. And one of the last things he said to his nephew was like, what do you want me to make you? And he literally handed him, oh my God, what are they called? The little bubbly, they're things in the ocean. Now I cannot think of it to save my life. They're like a little ball of spiky stuff. I talk about it all the time on my social media, but crap, I can't, but it's like a little black ball of spikiness. And I told him what it looked like. He was like, yeah, that's definitely Vince. That was literally the last thing he told me to make him like as a joke. And I said, he's also mentioning a red ATV that rolled over a hill. And his uncle's eyes got real big and was like, oh, crap. And the son that crossed over, his mom looked at him and she's like, what is she talking about? And he was like, well, you remember that one time when we went out to that ATV park? Vince may have rolled over and like we thought he was just over and he was gone. So, yeah, those are the little things that they will give us that mom didn't know. But it was very, very much just them doing it. That's gonna make me crazy thinking about that little sea urchin.
Okay,
that's what it was. I'm like, what is it? It's a little sea urchin. I was gonna go crazy for a minute. That's always one of my favorite ones because his uncle's eyes were like that within seconds. It was so cool. And I think they've done stories on like TikTok about it, which I think is hilarious. As far as the individual solving his own death, years ago, I met with this girl and she was telling me how, well, I connected with her dad and she was like, yeah, he was killed by a pretty infamous serial killer in the 80s. And I was like, oh, that's different. That's interesting. And
yeah.
He showed me his death and the gruesome way he was murdered and where they found his car. But he kept showing me a toolbox in the back seat. And she was like, eh, I don't know. I was a baby. I don't know. And so she got a session with her mom with me so I could explain it. And yeah. She was like, everything hits the nail on the head except the toolbox. I don't know what you're talking about with the toolbox. And I didn't know what it meant, but right. It was very clear, this yellow toolbox in the back seat. A couple months later, I did another reading for, and he did the same thing. He started giving me more details about the man that found him and like the water it was at and like the name of the road it was on. And she was like, it's crazy how accurate that is, but the toolbox makes no sense. I don't know. Then it's wild, probably a year or so later, she called me and she was like, I have to tell you something. And I was like, cool. What you gonna, we're doing a session. What are we doing? And she said her other daughter was listening to a true crime podcast. And the individual, the serial killer that they assumed killed, you know, her husband and my client's dad, he was on that. They were talking about his case. And the podcast hosts were saying how it's so crazy, for 2 years in the southern part of the United States, he had like a partner that rode with him for 2 years. And the MO fit her dad's death, like he was known for bludgeoning people to death with a hammer. So her dad was murdered by being bludgeoned to death by a hammer, and that's what this man was known, that's like his MO, was killing people with a hammer, not the man accused of his death, but the partner that was with him for 2 years. And it was like a wave hit me and knocked me off my feet, and he showed me this man and he showed me the toolbox and he showed me all of it, and the toolbox just disappeared. It was just gone. And I have not talked to that individual since then, but come to find, this is, oh, freaks me out. I got goosebumps. The man that was with the serial killer, his last name was Tool. And if you look him up, that's what he was known to do, was to beat people to death with hammers. And so I was like, oh, that's freaky. And that just, to this day, it's probably one of the freakiest things I've ever done, because he's never come back. And that was a few years ago. And I talk to his daughter all the time. And it's just so weird. So it's crazy how they bring in messages. Like, he was able to finally like let go completely. Not like he was stuck in the middle. He had crossed over, but it was a piece of unfinished business. Like, holy crap, you guys are pointing at the wrong guy. It's this guy literally with the name Tool. Like, it was wild. But yeah, we talk about that a lot. It's in my book. We talk about it everywhere because it's probably everybody's favorite.
Wow. That is so amazing. Weird. That's so weird and amazing.
So weird. It freaked me out.
Yeah. I wonder if they ever got the guy on those charges.
Oh no, he's dead. He's been gone. He's been dead. He was caught years later for doing the same exact thing to different men. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he'd been gone.
This is an odd question. Would you ever get in touch with someone like the serial killer, or have conversations with that?
The weird documentary obsessed serial killer fascination inside of me would love to, but I don't know if I could. Like, part of me says yes, and then the human part's like, girl, sit down. Like, what are you doing? But I have a morbid fascination with people like that anyways. I don't know. It'd be interesting. It'd be very interesting.
Just have the conversation and be like, what was going on? Yeah.
What was going on? I want to pick apart your mind in like the weirdest psychological way.
Yeah. And what are you doing now?
What are you doing now? How do you feel about that? Like,
yeah.
What? Yeah. That's just the weird me part, I think, because I'm obsessed with that kind of stuff anyways. I think that's why that case always stood out to me, because I was like, this is like the two things I'm fascinated with, like merging as one. It was very cool.
Yeah, that is very cool. I'm sure it brought a lot of closure to you, the mom and the daughter.
Oh, yeah. It was very, very wild. I've actually talked to that podcast host, and we did a conversation about it. I was like, so you guys were a key element in us all taking these pieces and putting them together. It was very cool.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the role of a death doula is relatively unknown to many. And we kind of went in and described it a little bit. But can you describe it more into what your work involves and really go into more, a little more details, steps, like how you support individuals and families through the process of dying?
Okay, so just like in mediumship, every single client is very different. Like I said, one may come years in advance, like this is what I want, this is what I want to do, like how do I set up everything? We do everything from basic, make sure like a hospice nurse does medical stuff. We do spiritual, emotional, physical stuff. I will be like, so, hey, look, do you have letters written you want? Do you have a plan? Have you talked about your plan with your family? Sometimes they'll have very opinionated family members and they don't know how to tell their children or sisters or loved one, I want this. So we work as their advocate. I will gladly step in and be that one that's kind of on an outside, unbiased opinion, because I want them to be happy, whatever they want. At the end of the day, it's their life. So I will gladly be that one that has these uncomfortable conversations or be like the median, you know, person for them. And it just kind of takes some of the stress off. Other times a death doula, there are so many different options for death doulas. You can be trained. There's so many really great training options and schools you can go to. There's like the International End of Life Doula, Death Wives, great, incredible schools you can go to be trained. And everyone's a little different. We do everything from like, if you want to like aftercare of the body, after your body has passed away, we'll take care of the aftercare. So that way there's still dignity in your dying. That's a key role, is dignity in dying. We will be with you, sit with you days before. We'll help you set everything up. I'm just as much a support to the family and the loved ones as I am to the individual that's transitioning. We try to do whatever they need. Every single situation is different, very different. Some want you very involved. Some just kind of want like that external backup, making sure they're checking all the boxes.
Yeah. If you're able to share, what's the oddest request that you've ever had?
Oh, I don't think any of them are odd. Most of them don't know how to tell their loved ones what they want, or they will have secrets about like a paternity or something like that. They're like, I need to tell them, but I don't know how to tell them. Yeah. I will gladly be the one to sit down and be like, so this is what we need to talk about. Or if they're telling, I think one of the hardest ones is people don't know how to advocate for themselves, like people pleasers in general, especially parents. They know their kids like want them to be buried here, so they have a place, but they don't want to be buried. They want to be cremated and over here. But every time they do it, they get kickback or they get guilt thrown at them. And I'm like, oh no, absolutely not. We're not doing that. We're not doing that. I've seen people that want to be in nature when they pass away, which I love 1,000%. I'm with them. And that's okay. We did a podcast with a really cool group that I will send you their information. I think you would really like them a lot. Called Cocktails and Conspiracies. They are great. They're absolutely fantastic. And the host half jokingly was like, I want to have like a taxidermy thing so I can stare at my husband so that way he never like has another woman in my house. Like, not happening. And I'm like, I support that 1,000%. We need to get you in like in one of those pictures. And she's half joking, but she's like, no, really, I don't want, like, this is what I want. And I think it's so cool to like have these conversations. And it really is just part of the process to accepting our mortality, you know, but I'm down with whatever you want. I think there's so many cool options that people just don't know. I really, really, really advocate making what I call your death book. We did an online workshop last year. We're going to do it again this year, where it shows you how to take a binder and literally put all your plans together, get them done. So when it's your time, you can hand it to whoever's in charge and be like, this is exactly what I want. No arguments. Don't try to change my mind. This is what I want. And I think it's really, really important we do that. So having those uncomfortable conversations, they're done. They're in this book. Here's what I want. And I think we're doing that in June, I think is when our next online workshop is. It's a lot of fun. But by the end of it, you're way more comfortable talking about what you want and your options. People don't realize like you can be turned into trees or stones, or they have like aquamation, which is like a water version of cremation. There's so many cool things and people just don't know. You can donate your body to science. Like that's so, I mean, I don't want to do that, but that's so cool. Yeah. I'm fascinated by that stuff. They just don't know there's options. They think you get put in the ground or you're cremated and that's it. No, I'm fascinated with human composting. I would love to own like a big facility, that'd be fun, but so many options.
So what advice do you have for those who are in the process of dying, and their family, they just can't come together.
Get you a death doula. Get you an unbiased third party. Some will donate their time for those conversations. I normally just donate my time. I'm not going to charge you an hourly rate for me to be like, look, this is what they want and you have to deal with it. But you have to get real with yourself. And that's very hard for people to really sit down and be like, this is what I want, but I know it's not going to make everybody else happy, so I'll just do this. That's so sad. That always breaks my heart. I want to go in and like shake everybody around them. Like, it is not about you. It is about them. And the sooner we have those conversations, the easier it'll be. And again, it all goes back to the beginning of not being comfortable talking about death and grief. If we can start having these conversations earlier, they will respect them a lot easier and be a whole lot easier transition for everybody. It really will. But yeah, you can go on. There are so many ways to contact a death advocate and a death and dying, you know, assistant. It's endless. There are so many options. There really are. I really encourage people to look at Death Wives. If they need someone, they're probably my favorite ethical providers of death doulas. They're really great.
So what should people look out for then? As far as ethical?
Again, it all comes down to trusting your instincts and your intuition. It has lifetimes of experience, and you should trust that little nagging thing. You can meet with 15 people that do this and you're going to feel drawn to one. Not that any of the other ones are wrong or bad or whatever. You're going to feel like my energy matches your energy and I'm good with that. Everybody brings something different to the table. You may need somebody who's more clinical about things, and that's okay. You need somebody like, consider like Virgos, like checklists. They may like somebody who's more like X, Y, Z, sign my name here, I'm out. Other people may just need somebody to hold that space for them and have these conversations. Yeah. So it's just like a doctor, be comfortable exploring your options and meeting with different people to see what works best for you. And that's completely okay. It's okay.
Yeah. Great advice.
You don't have to go with your first option. Go explore.
Yeah. Keep your options open.
Absolutely. 1000%. Yeah.
Absolutely. So paranormal experiences can be both intriguing and also unsettling. What are your thoughts on the paranormal, and how do you help others understand and cope with such experiences?
I'm obsessed with the paranormal. I love it. We've worked with paranormal investigators and teams for years, and hands down, absolute, I will hype them up every chance I get, is New Jersey Paranormal. John and Chris are exceptional humans, but they are also the most ethical and authentic and transparent paranormal investigators you will ever meet. They're very cool. Be careful with paranormal investigators that are very clickbaity. Like, there's a lot of them. Just like with mediums, I'm convinced 90% of paranormal investigators are fakes and frauds. So again, take all of it with like a grain of salt, unless you see it and feel it for yourself. You just have to. When it comes to paranormal investigators, ones that are convinced every time there's a noise, oh, there's a demon in there. Just stop. No, we don't do that. Stop it. We don't do that. Hollywood has hyped it up. It is so crazy. Like, I physically see people that are transitioned, but they don't look like zombies in creepiness. They, to me, look like regular people, just a little bit different transparency level. But a good paranormal investigator will try every possible way to debunk it, and like truly debunk it, not just be like, well, I checked it, it's not like a fleck of dust. It's really like, no, we need to get in there and see if maybe your readers are picking up radio waves that are a few miles. Like, they really are very ethical, and if they're not ethical, I ain't got time for them. I just do not. I consider this work, again, very sacred work, and very, it's based in trust and understanding and respect, and if they can't do that, I just don't play with it at all. But yeah, check out New Jersey Paranormal. They are my favorite team of all time, and they do like live investigations on like Instagram and stuff, I think on Tuesdays. But like, you can sit there and interact with them while they're doing stuff. It's very cool. I've been on a few of them, and they're fantastic. They're fantastic. Oh, wow. They're based obviously out of New Jersey. They're the best. I love them.
That's fascinating. So go into a little bit more and tell our listeners what exactly paranormal, what that entails.
So with paranormal, a lot of people are have a very, again, it's almost like grief. Like we have a little box that we put the paranormal in, like they're throwing stuff and they're levitating things, and that can happen. Absolutely. But a lot of the time it's just reality. What, how we consider it is not real. And we have almost like these like layers of reality, mm-hmm. and they can be in a space and they don't care about you. They may not even realize you were there and they're going about their business. Happens all the time. Then there's stuff like residual energy where, like, say if someone had a really tragic sudden death and that energy was embedded and it's like a loop. So a lot of the times if you hear somebody that got hit by a car and people see this ghost that walks across the road over and over, that's just residual energy. It's like a record on loop and it's stuck there. They're not stuck, just that energy is stuck there, not them as a whole. It's just was such a hard, traumatic, you know, situation that you'll see the remnants of it. Again, there's some incredible people out there that really do their work. If at any point in time you feel unsafe in your home and you genuinely think like there is something there, absolutely feel free to contact people. There's incredible teams that focus their whole work on doing just this. Like, this is what they do. We used to do like house clearings and stuff with people to like help them rid people of stuff. And I actually stopped doing it years ago because I truly believe that we are our greatest asset. Like, this is your space. You have to claim your mm-hmm. space. So if you feel something weird, be like, okay, look, I see you. I don't know what you're doing, but this is my home. And unless you come with love and light, you need to get out and you need to go. And you have to mean it in your whole heart. And it means way more coming from the person who owns that home than an outsider doing it. But yeah, there's absolutely incredible people who can help you if you really need help, for sure.
So you mentioned that every day is a new opportunity to learn lessons to carry throughout our lives. Can you share a significant lesson you've learned through your work that has been a profound impact on you?
Oh gosh. True unconditional love is always a very big one. I see a lot of people that have transitioned that were not great parents or partners or children. When they get to the other side, they get a perspective. Perspective is the number one lesson we have learned. Everybody's perspective is different, but they can see it now. When they were in life, they lived a certain way and didn't see anything wrong with it. But once they transition over, they're like, oh, okay, I see that now. Most of the time when people transition, they want to know that they were loved and that the love they gave others, you know, they felt it. Like they want their loved ones to know they were loved. But perspective is key. Everybody's perspective is different. You can look at the same box and there's 20 different people standing around it. They're all going to see it differently. And I think perspective is like the number one key, for sure. For sure. Just, and just be a good human. Like, we're souls having a human experience. We're supposed to learn things in this, and it's okay that we don't know everything. We're not supposed to. So be present in the human experience, for sure. And it's, again, part of that perspective.
Yeah. Do you find as people get closer to their death, that they're more in the present?
Sometimes. Yeah. And normally right when, it may even be more so when somebody loses a loved one, they become very, very present in their own bodies. I have a very, very dear friend of mine who lost her husband tragically out of nowhere. And she went from being a 30-something year old woman with two kids living their best life to suddenly it's gone. And suddenly her thing is like, take every picture possible. Because when she was going through trying to find pictures of her husband, he wasn't in hardly any of them. Aww. And she was like, oh no. So she like floods everybody with pictures all the time. She's like, be in the picture, take the picture, all the pictures, because she realizes how quickly it can be gone. You don't have that chance anymore. So normally it's the ones who are processing grief that become very present. At least at first, they become very present.
Yeah, that's fascinating. You said that by pictures. When I was growing up, my grandfather, every Christmas would make us take pictures, like family pictures. And we all just like complained. And now that he's passed away years ago, you know, those pictures are so treasured. We're like, we're so glad that he made us do that, because he didn't leave them for him. He left them for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm fascinated with this. Like, my grandmother did it years ago and I never got it, but she had this like little radio and she had a little microphone and she would record herself telling stories and like the old school cassette tapes, and nobody understood, like, what are you doing? And now they are priceless. They are priceless. And I'm always encouraging people, like, make voice memos, take videos, and annoy your kids and your friends. Who cares? They are going to love them one day. And that's why I always tell my kids, I'm like, one day when I am gone, you're going to thank me for these. Like, you are annoyed now, but I promise you, you're going to eat these up later. Even if you're making fun of me while you do it, it's going to give you a good memory in general. Like, even if you're laughing about it, it's just enjoyable. Just do it.
Yes, that's great advice. So finally, for those interested in exploring mediumship and seeking support from a death doula, what guidance would you offer to help them on their journey and to find the right support?
Okay. Again, don't be afraid to explore options. Talk to different people, follow them on social media, look at reviews, see what they've done. Just because they're famous does not mean that they are good. So take personal experiences and stories. Like, that's what you have to do. I go to expos and seminars and I get to meet with some great people and they're great, but they're just not for me, and that's okay. But at the same time, if you feel drawn to that person, by do it, but always, always trust your instinct. Do your research, check into them, make sure that you feel comfortable with them. And that's, if you meet with them and you, let's say you pay for a reading, you sit down, you're like, this ain't it. A ethical practitioner will be like, you know what? That's okay. And I support you. They may give you suggestions for people to check out, or they may not. And either way, it's okay. But don't be afraid to say, no, this isn't for me. You don't need a reason. Just no, it's not it. So don't be afraid to do that. It's okay if you hurt their feelings. They'll be fine. They'll be fine.
It should be fine.
They'll be fine. If they're not, then they're probably not the person for you anyways. But yeah, there's some, with this whole death positive movement that started, like, death doulas didn't even, were talked about until the past year or two. So I love that. We're starting to get light on it. It's a really cool experience, but check them out. There's so, you can just Google death doula and you'll have 20 different options. Go look into them and then go look at them on social media and then see if they've done podcasts or interviews and listen to them and you'll find the right one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dominique, for all the information you gave us. This has been so fascinating learning from the perspective of death. I honestly, leaving this conversation, feel better about death.
Oh, good. I love it. I love having these conversations.
I'm not really fearful of it, but I definitely have been very enlightened on things. I definitely know I'm going to hire a death doula when that time comes for me to go over to the other side. But yeah.
Do it.
Thank you. And all your information will be in the show notes. Any links, I'll be able to reach out to contact you for your book, for any your workshops and stuff coming up.
Yeah.
So
again, all the things. We'll be at a few expos this year and doing a cool festival. Look, it's fun. I'm everywhere. We do all the things.
Awesome. Well, I hope my followers will go follow you on social media and
be able to love it.
Yeah. Again, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope you have an awesome day.